the final episode of part 4 of this series. I am pleased to bring you an interview that I did with Alex Thaberg Brady, who plays Francis Mellett in the series. Enjoy. So I'd like to thank Alex Thaberg Brady for joining me. He played Francis Mellett in the miniseries Band of Brothers. He is credited in 2 episodes, but it's very possible that he was in more of them. We will find that out as we start talking to him. So Alex, thank you very much for finding the time to talk to us.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me on board.
Yeah, all right. So the first question is going to be a simple question. How did you get cast in Band of Brothers? Like, what's that story? How did your journey with Band of Brothers begin?
Well, my journey, slightly different to some of the other guys in the cast. I came in originally as a special abilities actor on it. I had some military experience, and they wanted 20 guys to sort of with military experience to come and work alongside the main cast and make them look good. So we were, we were there to brought in, went to boot camp, did every scene. And that's kind of my start into it. We got auditioned, had an audition process with Captain Dale Dye and Tom Hanks to get into that. And it was a lot of guys went for this, these 20 places. And
the boot camp that you did wasn't the boot camp with the actors then.
Yeah. We did the same boot camp. Yeah.
You did
all in together.
Oh, okay.
All in together. Yeah. So we did. So
like there were the actors didn't know what they were doing, and they were being taught, okay, this is how you cock the gun, and this is how you hold it when you're shooting and stuff like that. And then all the guys that were trying to get those 20 spots were like, what the hell are you doing? Of course you hold the gun this way. Of course you do it this way.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of that. A lot of that. What are these guys doing? These actors don't know what the hell they're doing. And obviously, Dale was overseeing this in his Captain Dale Dye way, the only way that guy works, which is he's an incredible man. And that was my route into it. Yeah, we all went to boot camp together, and we all got kitted up. We're all in the same boat, bus to Longmoor, and to start the boot camp for 2 weeks prior to filming. And so that was my entry, which was slightly different to the other cast members. But then we started filming. We did the first episode, Kurahi, and for some reason I was in it a lot. We watched the first sort of sets of rushes, and I was being picked up a lot on camera and having a lot of scenes. And I was then asked, pulled aside by casting to see if I'd like to audition. And I didn't know what was going on, but I was asked to audition. I had a series of auditions right up to then auditioning with Tom Hanks and doing some scenes with George Khalil, who played Ali. And then that's when I changed from being a special abilities to going through into cast and being cast as Frank Mellett.
Oh, wow. And I mean, this, you said this was after they had already filmed the Kurahi episode?
Yeah, we were into, I'd say about most of the way through the episode, and we were starting to watch the rushes back and some of the scenes that had been done. And I think they'd seen maybe something in me or a likeness to the character or how it developed. I wasn't entirely sure. And then obviously Dale Dye was a great advocate for bringing up guys through the cast if they saw something in them to give them smaller parts and give them parts here and there. And it went from there. My part sort of grew from that point and sort of went from special abilities to cast. So it was an amazing process, and something that sort of like carried me on. I went through into acting from that point. I hadn't really thought about being an actor beforehand, so slightly different to the other guys, but just as rewarding.
Oh wow. Okay, so you mentioned that you had to have a meeting or an interview with Tom Hanks. How did that go? What was that?
Yeah,
I mean, I think it went well. That was because they accepted you for the part, but
it went well. It was terrifying. I mean, it was I think he'd been doing he was doing Castaway at the time, and so he was quite very slim, very brown with a big beard. And I didn't really recognize him at first, and then I recognized the voice, and I was like, "Wow, this okay." And then we met, met with Tom, and I had to sit down with George and sit and pretend to be in a foxhole. I think we because we were auditioning for what would essentially be episode seven, the main sort of scenes that I would be in, and where I my character and George Khalil are sharing foxholes, which is this stuff was actually cut from the original episode seven. It was only originally, but they changed the look and feel of the episode. So myself and George as Ali and Mehmet were sharing a foxhole, and yeah, so I was re you know was auditioning those scenes, basically doing that dialogue with George and being in the foxholes in Bastogne and in a Bojack. So that's kind of how I auditioned, and yeah, I met with Tom and just went from there. They liked it and gave me the part.
That's just amazing the way it is. I mean, did you have any interest in acting beforehand, or?
No, I didn't really. It's the first thing I'd ever done. So it was, you know, they said, "Can I do an American accent?" And I said, "Okay, I'll try." And then I worked with the voice coaches, and they were great. And yeah, just developed it from there.
Wow. And I mean, I assume you were you a fan of movies beforehand and things like that, or it was just that
Oh yeah, always.
you were in the army and you finished the army and then you had this opportunity and you said, all right, it's a way to supplement my income, so might as well,
Yeah, well, I was just, you know, I went to back to art college, and I was at art college at the time, and I'd kind of finished that, and I was going down that route. But yeah, loved movies. And then obviously I'd seen Saving Private Ryan, and that blew my mind as a film, as a change in direction on war films. And obviously I'd seen films like Platoon, and so I was aware of all these characters. I was aware of Del Dai from Platoon and what he'd done. You know, I knew about the process of boot camps, what he'd sort of like developed, and what he'd developed for Saving Private Ryan. But I had no idea that I would suddenly be involved in going to do a boot camp with Captain Del Dai, this guy that had changed, you know, military advising in, quintessentially in the film industry, hands down. This guy changed the way actors worked in a military setting. And yeah, so it completely floored me, the fact that suddenly I'm now in a production which is so similar, you know, same crew and same ethos behind it as Saving Private Ryan, being advised by the guy that, you know, created the look and well, that realism within Platoon alongside Oliver Stone within, you know, Captain Del Dai. So yeah, I always loved movies, but to suddenly be in something like Band of Brothers was surreal, and just I'd say the best job of my life.
Oh wow. Okay, that's a pretty big statement. I mean, since it is, 20, 25, 26 years since that. So that's wow. And I mean, I know that you've been in other things since then. I mean, so wow.
So yeah, yeah, I mean, I think if it goes across the board, you ask, I'd say 99% of the guys who were in the show with me, it is, I think the show transcends just being a job. You look at the brotherhood that we have together that still stands today. There is no other job I've ever been on, acting job that is, that you have remained a family with the cast, that we all still keep in contact with daily. You know, it's an incredible thing to be been a part of, and I still can't quite believe, yeah, like you said, it's 25, 26 years ago.
Wow. Wow. Okay, so what was, I mean, obviously your scenes were all only done in England, right? So,
Yes,
and
yeah,
you were there for the
that's
entire
right.
10 month period of filming, or just specifically for the two. I mean, okay, I'll go back to what I was saying before. I mean, you're credited on IMDb as being in only two episodes, part four and part seven. But as you just mentioned before, you were highly seen or shown in the Currie episode. So,
Yeah.
but I guess you weren't credited because you didn't have any lines. Is that what it comes down to?
Yeah, I wasn't credit. Yeah, that's right. I didn't have any lines, but like most of the guys, it was such a unique job where we were had to be there in scenes and in the background because we were a company of soldiers, and the way that Dale worked it within our squads and our platoons, that you were, if for example, second squad were being filmed, or mortars were being filmed, or the machine, a gun, gunners, you needed to be around there to keep the familiarity going. So people do like to nitpick and do like to pull things apart, and they say, well, why is he there? That he's not part of third platoon, so we would keep it he would keep it working like that. So if you're not speaking, you're still acting, you're still in the scene, you're still part of the action, as it were. So yeah, most of the guys right throughout would be in the scenes or in the background as the main actors were doing their dialogue or their main scene, or as their focus. And I was in it right up until my death scene in episode 7, when Frank gets killed by the sniper in Foix. But then I was pulled back in to do various other bits after that, away from camera. But I w as a favor, because Dale was like, you've worked so hard, I'm not going to let you go and just die and disappear. He said, so if you want to come back and carry on working, just not be in front of the camera, or just be hidden because your character's dead. You
Have
can do. So
you
I
been able
did.
to spot yourself in those other episodes?
No. They've I'm very well hidden. I was told by Dale, don't, if I'm allowed to swear, don't fucking get on
No, but you're going to be in the back,
camera.
far in the distance or
Yeah.
something like that. Because hey, that's a
Yeah,
guy who
yeah, yeah.
looks like that,
Yeah.
looks like Mellon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit like, it looks like Mellet from the back. Is that Mellet? Is
That's
it
right.
not
Mellon's goat
Mellet?
has returned.
Mel Skelets has
Okay, now
returned,
do
yeah.
you know how many times Mellon is mentioned in the book Band of Brothers?
A few times, yeah, he is. I mean, he's obviously he's mentioned in the whole Marmion Farm area, and when he links up with Guth and Talbot. So there is quite a few mentions of Mellet, and also I think he's mentioned in Forrest Guth's book a bit as well. So yeah, there's a few mentions of Frank.
Okay. So obviously he is mentioned a few times.
Yeah.
He's mentioned on page 127. Okay, the men cross with pounding hearts but without incident. They leaped out of the boats and moved forward. Gordon had the machine gun on the left flank. He set it up and preparing to defend against attack. Corporal Francis Mellett had the machine gun on the right flank. Private Stafford was at the point for the column seeking contact with the Dutch underground. Heiliger immediately behind them. Okay, that's that's one of the mentions.
Yeah, that's the river crossing, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's mentioned that he was killed in Belgium.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, those are the only two times that he's mentioned.
Right. Okay, that's in the, yeah. That must be from the
Right.
other book, the
Exactly.
Forrest Guth book, where
Right.
he speaks. Yeah.
And did you ever have the opportunity to be in contact with his family?
No, unfortunately, it's quite sad with Frank's family. They tried to find out some more information. His mother and father were of Irish descent, which is similar to me. My mum's Irish, my dad's from South America, but my mum's Irish, and I'm from Ireland. And there, so we had that similarity. He had two brothers. So you had John Mellett and Michael Mellett, and obviously the mum and the dad. His other brother John was killed in Papua New Guinea 2 months after
Oh,
Frank
wow.
was killed. And the other brother, Michael, was in the Seabees, so he was US Navy, and a similar thing to Saving Private Ryan and the Nitsch brothers. they pulled Michael out of service because two brothers had been killed in action, leaving one remaining. So there was a similarity to Saving Private Ryan there, with obviously no more next of kin if Michael had been killed. The father died in the 50s, and the only one that outlived them was the mother, who I think she Mary, she died in like 1972. So after that, the Michael, the youngest brother who was in the Navy, he didn't have any kids. So kind of the family, that family from New York, they just disappeared, unfortunately. Now I've been over to New York to pay my respects to Frank's grave because he was repatriated. And it was only then that I really, as I was standing at his grave in Long Island National Cemetery, that my wife pointed and she said, "Look, the headstone next to Frank's has the same surname." And that's when I realized that his brother was buried right next to him. So they'd repatriated both of the boys back from the Pacific and back to and from Belgium back to New York. So that's pretty much all we could find. I mean, there must be other family members out there. Irish families tend to go quite big. Like my grandmother's family is like 13 kids.
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends on how far
So
back you go. That's the thing, you know.
yeah, exactly. So I'd love to be able to try and find some living family or some relatives. And there has to be out there, but I haven't been able to do that so far.
Oh wow. Okay, so here you are. You're on the set. You're filming. Your character gets killed. You continue to film off camera so that they can't see it's you. And I mean, again, you're still spending time with all the other actors. You know, was there any type of separation between the actors and the special what'd you call them? The special
Special
abilities
abilities.
cast. Like, were they all staying in
No,
the same hotel? Were they all, you know, or was there some sort of disconnect between them? Because, you know, these are the guys who are being, you know, featured, and these are the guys who are the background guys, you know, who actually know what they're doing.
No, I would say no, because it was the only real disconnect, I suppose, was between us and the replacements. The guys came in who hadn't done boot camp. Everyone who had been to boot camp, what they all had instilled in us was like we came out of it like a company of soldiers. And so we're all tight. I mean, the obviously the American cast were in hotels or in their own apartments that were sort of set up in London for them. But the rest of the cast who were British were still staying at home, you know, all the young London actors and the jobbing actors. As such, so were the special abilities guys, because all the special ability guys were UK as well. So no, we were all in the same place. We all got changed in the same sort of tents with the costume. We were all together all the time, and there was no real disconnect. We all went out with each other, had great nights out, and the only difference was that when I went to cast, I got a trailer and I was on set, so that was quite and more pay.
That's what they got, or that's what you
No, I got more pay and a trailer, so as soon as you got cast,
Ah,
you
you're
get that
saying more than the
privilege.
other special the other special okay.
Yeah.
And after your character got killed, did you lose the trailer?
Yeah, I lost the trailer. You only really tend to get the trailers when you're doing your scenes on set, and so that's really, really nice. So I was like, "Oh, this is a shame," but it was still great to be there and around the
Wow,
guys.
that's really cool. Now, okay, I have another question about the boot camp itself. Having been through a real military boot camp, what did you think of the way that Dale Dye did it? You know, was it somewhat dumbed down for actors, or I mean, obviously it's a shorter period of time. We're not talking about, you know, it's what was it? It was 10 days or 2 weeks or something like that. So obviously there's a lot more that you
10
have to get
days.
in, you know, get in during that time, and obviously you're not gonna have the same type of discipline. And so I mean, there's the obvious differences. I mean, I also have a military background, so I'm familiar from that perspective. I've never been to the Aldeias, course, so I couldn't tell you, from what my experiences would be. Again, my experiences are from over 30 years ago, so I don't know how much I would really remember from that anyway. But that's the point is that I'm assuming they're teaching them the basics. But did you feel that it was even more than just what they need in the basics? They were given a more realistic perspective of what soldiers go through during that type of training?
Yeah, I think what's quite amazing the way Dale works is, so first and foremost, he gives you the historical aspect, the background. So you're understanding that you're entering, phones were taken off us. We went straight into World War II equipment, into old barracks. So you're already in that world. You're already, as soon as you're in your kit, you're there. There's no mobile phones, no contact with the outside world, and everyone's character names, it's all working like that. American accents across the board. On top of that, he's also then breaking it down into a sort of diet version of a boot camp. It's still difficult, physical activity, physically draining, mentally draining, the amount of information you're trying to take on, and retain. It's an onslaught similar to a real boot camp. So he has that way of working, which does link it through and has that similarity, as well as the historical aspect and the grand scheme of what we're doing, the importance of what we're doing. He's also layering in there. And he also does something quite incredible where he creates chaos amongst us. To He created a chaos amongst us that we would then find that there was no one else we could rely on apart from ourselves, so that we would pull together into this unit of men. And it worked, because at I'd say day three, day four, we were like, what the f is going on here? We're especially with As guys started getting promoted within the boot camp, so the officers would become the officers. So Lieutenant Winters would get promoted, Lieutenant Nixon would get up, Randleman becomes sergeant, I became a first, a corporal. You get promoted, and then these guys would then take on the responsibility. So Winters and Nixon would come in, and we'd be asking, I'd be, for example, asking Damien, like, he'd say, right, we need a runner, and I'd come on as a runner and have to go and deliver something to, third platoon across this, bridge. And I'm asking him questions, and he's trying to work out what to do and make up and be a leader. And Dale and the cadre that were teaching us, they let it almost get to the point of falling apart, where we were like, what, this isn't work, we don't know what to do. And it pulled us together into such a unit that we started to then function. People started to take on responsibility. People started to realize that they had a responsibility to their men and to their squads and to their squad leaders and their NCOs and their officers, and both ways, so up and down. And he coined it as lightning in a bottle, Dale said. Creates this chaos, then out of chaos comes this unity of the men. And I think then we started to really get it. We started to Everything started to fall into line, marching in step, our weapons drills, when we had our attacks working, our attacks in the fighting up in built up areas, the Fibbia sort of villages that on the army base that we were training at, we were doing it, and it all started to fit. So yeah, definitely similarities to boot camps, but also pulled away from that and given the historical side of what we're doing, added another layer to what we were doing. And you could see how proud Dale was that, we finished boot camp and then we started filming like a day, 2 days later, and he kept us back. We're all in uniform. He kept us back from the car, from the crew, from everyone, and he marched us at Hatfield down a runway in step, full uniform, singing, and everyone just stopped and watched this, what had been this group of guys beforehand that didn't even know how to do their webbing up, to suddenly everyone in pride and wearing their uniforms completely differently than we had been at the beginning. You know, everyone was now looking really squared away, really smart, really attached to what they were being part of. So yeah, it was he created, as he said,
Wow,
lightning in a
that's
bottle.
just really, really cool. Years before, you had been through your own type of military training. And, like when you look back, which one do you look back on fun, more fun? Which one do you think helped you become a better, I don't know. I don't even know the right word, because obviously one is real and one is, I won't say fake, because it's not fake, but it's less real because it's meant, to be used, to make us believe that it's real. That type of thing.
Yeah, I think they own they each have their place with me. You know, I was a boy in the cadets, and that military side of it was a young man sort of learning his way and finding his way. But then within Band of Brothers, it was I think a historical responsibility as well, which then sort of like pushed me more into a different understanding a matter. I mean, my grandfather had been in the Second World War, was in the Royal Air Force, and you know, I'd always had a historical understanding of World War II and obviously World War I as well. I had family that had been killed in France as well. So yeah, it was two prong. I think, you know, when I was younger in the RAF, there I didn't really think about it as much. It was kind of just day to day. I think once went to boot camp and started doing something like Band of Brothers, I really started to grasp the historical side of it a lot more. And yeah, it kind of made me grow
Wow,
up just
that's
that little
really
bit
cool.
more.
I mean, obviously there's also the whole thing, everyone when you're in real boot camp, when you're scared out of your wits because you don't know, you don't know what you have coming at you. Here, when you're doing this, that all right, this is going to be for 10 days, 2 weeks. It's it's serious, but not as serious from that perspective. Like if you mess up, worst thing you can do is fire you. That type of thing. It's not.
Exactly. Yeah, there isn't there's a lot less fallout, you know. You're not gonna when you piss off an NCO, you're not gonna
That's it.
get quite what you
That's
get
it. Well, I don't know. You never know. I've heard
when you're really
stories from
seven,
Dale
yeah.
Dye and about Dale Dye and stories from Freddie Joe that they wanted to give you guys the experience
Yeah.
that you needed. So.
Oh, they did. They really did. And there was no one, you know, put on a pedestal, or any way, shape, or form. They really did cut everyone down to grassroots level, because anyone who, I mean, obviously within that group, you will always get someone who thinks, I don't need to
Right.
comply with this. I'm an actor. You know, I'm not naming names, but there was maybe one or two guys that were like that. Everyone else really, really settled into it and understood what we were doing. People would moan and complain and shoot the shit, but generally everyone was like, we're here to honor these
Right.
guys that
Okay,
we're portraying.
that makes sense. I mean, did anyone like get into real trouble there? I mean, you mentioned there's a few guys. I don't want names. Doesn't matter. But I'm saying, was there any of them that they said, all right, you're out of here. We don't want you to continue with this because of the way you're acting or reacting here, or
I think not in a. There was a couple of actors that I think had had slightly bigger parts, but due to their attitude within certain scenarios, and especially through sort of boot camp, I personally think that roles were reduced
oh, wow.
to
Okay.
reflect that
That's
attitude.
fair. That's fair. I mean, again, the guys who their characters lose their lives at a certain point, you can't really reduce. It's not like they're not going to say, okay,
You
Alex
can't
didn't
really
act right, so
reduce.
we're going to kill Mellet off in part five instead of part seven. That's
We're going to change history.
exactly from that perspective. I understand. That makes sense. And maybe that's how you got the part of Mellet. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe I did. Yeah, exactly. Maybe someone pissed someone off down further, earlier on, and they were like, "Oh, there's a
That's
window
right. Oh,
opened up
wow.
here."
That's just really cool. Okay, so you finished filming, and so you said that most of the characters once their most of the actors once their characters were killed, they just went home. They weren't going to be around anymore. But they kept you around because of your special abilities and stuff like that. So you basically stayed until
That's right.
the very end of all the filming from that perspective.
I did. I did stay there. I mean, we'd, by episode seven, they'd already started been into episode eight as well as, as crossovers and start to go into the, the prisoner of war camp side of the episodes. And then a lot of it was also pick up, that we were retracing any scenes that need to be reshot or reshoots. So I would kind of sometimes go back to do stuff that had been finished in episode seven, for example, or would be sort of like elsewhere. But it was almost, we'd almost broken the back of it pretty much of the filming
Did
by
they
then.
give you any parts as a German after you were killed, so that you were on the opposite? Because I know that use the same special abilities, guys. Both for on both sides, so.
Well, they did have a there was a German a special ability corps. So they had their own German boot camp before we did. Which I don't think it was 10 days. I think they went for about 7 days. They had about 5 or 7 days. So they had a German special ability boot camp. And they were the core Germans that we'd kill many, many times. as well as the stunt guys. So there's a yeah there's you can see, and there's a few, funnily, there are a few, we all became very close, and you can we're a big we're a big family when we're filming, so you can see there's a few guys that do pop up as Germans and Americans. I was never one of those
I guess
guys.
they were just afraid that someone would say, "Hey, what's Mellet doing on the German side?" It's
Exactly. I thought they were very tight about that. They were like, you just get as far away from the camera as you can get. Actually, just go and stand by the tea machine. That's how far away we want you.
if they're paying you, so why not?
Yeah, exactly.
All
I
right,
was happy.
so
I was getting
you
paid.
finished the filming, and I'm assuming you were among the people that were invited afterwards to the premiere.
Yeah, so that was to be over in France was incredible. I don't remember much of it because there was a lot of drinking
Okay, that's fair.
from everyone, but amazing experience. And then and I didn't really go back. I hadn't been back to Normandy from then until 2018, 2017, 2018. So it was a long time, and when I started going back with Tim Gray, with World War II Foundation, who would
Yeah, I
bring the
interviewed
cast
Tim
back over to Normandy.
a few weeks
So,
ago.
oh, lovely! Yeah, he's a fantastic guy, and he kind of set the precedent for bringing the cast back over to Normandy and to do Q&As, and that's really when I think we as a cast really started to get back together again. Basically through Tim Gray. I mean, we'd always sort of like kept in touch loosely, but Tim Gray kind of created this thing
So
of bringing
Tim
us all back together
is
again.
partially responsible for helping to keep you guys close together.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, we'd been in touch, and we'd meet up every now and again, and a few of in pockets, but between Tim Gray and Nolan Hemmings, who played Sergeant Grant, who would have the big sort of UK barbecue. We'd all meet at Nolan's house and get the cast together. It was really sort of like Tim Gray that would who kind of got us all back together. And actually, I got to say, actually, Rick Warden was pretty responsible as well, because he did a small documentary about us going back to where we trained and did boot camp, and so we were just, we hadn't loads of us hadn't seen each other in ages. We ended up just all sitting on a minibus going to Longmoor, which is part of Aldershot Army Barracks, where we trained. And just, I think it was a 20 year, no, not 20 years, it was, anyway, I can't remember
Yeah, I
how
guess
many
more
years it had been
drinking's
since boot
involved.
camp at that point, but he brought us down there, and then more drinking since. There's always alcohol.
It makes sense. I want to jump back a little bit. So, okay, you were at the premiere. You don't remember that much of what happened there. That's fine. What was your feeling when you finally, got to sit and watch the entire miniseries? Because, at the premiere, they showed basically from what I understand, clips from part one and the entire part two.
Yeah, that's right. I think it was I do remember paying a lot of attention to the real Easy Company members, to the vets, kind of focusing on them and to really kind of see their reaction to what we'd done. It was weird because it was almost like I was split between taking in what I was watching on the screen to seeing how they were viewing what we were doing. So God, it's so long ago, but yeah, so it's hard to, yeah, that reaction of seeing it come together and seeing it. I mean, we'd seen rushes, so you get to see when you're doing scenes and we get to see versions of it,
Right, but the rushes are
of
without
what we're
effects
doing
and
along
they're
the way,
without
but obviously
yeah.
there's no visual of, yeah. So, and it's, and it did sort of blow me away to, it gave me that moment of, it was so good that I
Okay.
disassociated myself from being in it, if you know what I mean. It still had the magic of it, watching this spectacle, this historical drama, sort of unfold, and then having to pinch yourself and going, I'm in this, is and we and layered that with the how the Real Easy Company members watched it and thought about it and how it moved them, you could see that we'd done
Okay.
something right.
That's really cool. Okay, and then so you've left the premiere and now you're sitting at home and you get to see the other 8 episodes or 8.5 episodes. Did you know which episodes you would be featured prominently in, or I mean, obviously you knew seven, you were going to be there.
Yeah, seven I knew. And I knew, yeah, four I knew, I was gonna sort of make my real appearance as Frank Mellett in episode four. And then, yeah, seven, it was it, you know, I any ask any actor, if you end up on the cutting room floor, it's always a bit of a blow to the stomach. And I had a lot of nice scenes with myself and George. Khalil, we've done a hell of a lot of stuff together around the foxholes, and it was a shame. Well, I understand why. So when I watched it, episode seven, expecting to see it there, and all of a sudden it's just a little bit of me, and then the death scene, I was like, oh man, that's the shame. I was looking forward to, seeing a lot more of myself, but I do understand why that was cut. It was the wrong feel. It was quite humorous what myself and George were doing. It was like light-hearted, trying to show the life in a foxhole rather than and trying to find a light side of life living in such extreme circumstances. And I think from what we were told that they went away from that side of it and wanted to show the brutality of what happened in the boy shacks and the amount of, people that lost their lives in that episode. They focused on that. So there's a funny, like, people at the bottom asked me this, like, I'm singing a song in my death scene, with George behind me, because George, in reality, Ali and Mellet were right together when Mellet got killed. It was slightly different. In reality, it was different. I think Mellet was exiting or looked through a doorway or a window, in a property in this street in Foix. And as he leaned through, a sniper hit him in the chest, and he fell back into Ali's arms and died in Ali's arms. So slightly different than the show, where the sniper has a headshot and blows my skull out, which is not very pleasant. So yeah, they changed that look and feel, and so they focused on that. But the whole setup of the scenes is why I'm singing the song. I'm singing this song with George, and I keep winding him up in the foxhole, and he keeps getting annoyed at me. And it's just this back and forth between Mellet and Ali. And then right at the end, I'm singing the song, and then I get killed. So That's why I'm singing the song, essentially. But you don't see the other scenes, so
Interesting.
you don't
Okay, well now
understand why I'm
everyone will
singing.
know, you know.
Yeah.
Did you like invite family and friends to sit and come and watch it with you and stuff like that, or
Yeah, I think, God, again, I was doing a lot of drinking back then. I think, yeah, I mean, I did, I think those when it sort of aired properly, I was sort of went home and with my mom and my family and stuff, and we watched a few of the episodes. Some episode I watched with friends as well, and some of the cast we got together. But yeah, mainly just
Okay.
with family.
Because Allie and Mellet were so close, did you ever speak to Allie? I mean, I'm trying to remember when he passed away. Did he? I don't.
Yeah, he passed away. Is it
Right, that's what I thought.
2000? It was after the premiere. It was after the big release. So I got some information from his son, and they were telling me about. I didn't really get to speak too much with Mo about Frank. Sometimes when you get a feeling that it's maybe not the right thing to do. And because that had played with him a long time, to have one of your friends die in your arms is, I didn't know how to approach that. But then I did get some information more about Frank and about the situation, and how they had been with each other through their family, which was amazing. And also, so other people who have known members of the family have also given me information about Frank and his relationship with other guys within the squad. I know that that Shifty Powers and Frank didn't get on very well, because Shifty regarded Frank as a Yankee. So there was all things like that. There's little nuances. You start to find out little things about, and also I found about the line that it was cut in the show, where but Frank actually said it to Ali in the foxhole, where he said he'd survived Normandy and he survived Holland, and he'd never been hit. He was one of the guys that had never did have a Purple Heart, never got a scratch on him, had been through all these major points of conflict right through from Normandy. And he'd said that to Mo, and that was in the foxhole, and that was 2 days before he got. And he said, look, if it happens, I think it's going to be bad. And 2 days later, he lost his
Right.
life on the 30th of
Wow.
January.
Yeah, that's unfortunately that's the way these things go. You know, there's no rule book.
Yeah. There is no rule book, exactly that. And it's, war takes the innocent and it
Correct.
takes the
100%.
guilty. It doesn't
Okay.
discriminate.
All right, so is there anything else that you feel that you want to share about your experiences playing Mellet, or in the 25 years since how it has affected you?
Well, obviously it was a great honor to portray Frank, to be part of this incredible show, this historical drama, and to really see the reach that it's made in the public, also in the armed forces. I think both UK and US that I've seen is just incredible. It's I think what really started to hit home is when, and the effect that the show's had is when we started to go back to Normandy, and see how much reverence and that the people of Normandy do hold for the US and the British and the Canadian troops that liberated Normandy in 1944. So we've really started to gain more of a perspective of the effect of the show, the history of these guys. And the more we went back to Normandy, we started to, I know Renee's talked about it. We started to think about what we could do to honor the guys that we portrayed, and make sure that all these people that served, and even currently, that they're not forgotten. They're not, their service is something that's not just passed into the history books. It should be kept alive and kept current, so that we learn from our mistakes, and which kind of led us to the documentary that we're doing now, which is called Band of Brothers Legacy. So it is now myself and two US veterans, Chase Millsap, who's an ex-Green Beret, and Brett Lee, who is ex-82nd Lieutenant Colonel. We got together and we created this basis for this documentary, which started off as to take myself and it worked out eight of my castmates to learn to jump for real with an airborne battalion training company in the US called the All Airborne Battalion, and to learn what these guys really did, to get an understanding, a true understanding of the sort of feelings that they would have gone through to learn to jump from a C-47, and then to take that to Normandy to jump it for the 80th out of a C-47 over the Cotentin Peninsula and in Normandy, and we managed to do it. So it's something that we hold dear to us, and to then to be able to turn this into documentary, which is now turned into the official 25th anniversary documentary of the show, which is incredible. So that's how much it means
Sounds that way.
to me as a show to be able to take something from that amount of time ago and
So how many
to
times?
try and
How many
keep it
times did
current,
you
make
jump?
sure we don't forget.
Six jumps with them,
So I've
or
done
six jumps? I
six
mean, were
jumps
there?
now.
Did you do like skydiving on your own before, or this is only?
I've skydived before, but this was different. So this is the military, this is the static line. So exactly the same as what they did in Band of Brothers. The hook up, shuffle, go to the door, and out you go. And especially out of a C-47, which is absolutely amazing to be. So we did our five training jumps to qualify, and then we jumped twice into Normandy. And then we will be to commemorate and to signify the launch, the premiere, which we're having in Normandy this year. We're going to jump again. So I have to fly back over to Atlanta to do a refresher course with
Oh,
some of my
wow.
castmates in about 2 weeks. So I'll be back with Renee and Mark, Christian, and I think a few of the other
Wow,
boys are gonna
this
come.
is so
So
cool.
yeah.
And so again, it amazes me that after 25 years,
Thank you.
you guys are all still, in touch and still trying to find ways to commemorate the, and respect the memories of these men, the men who survived and the men who didn't survive, because, as of now, unfortunately, there's none of them are around.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly. And that's even more highlighted. You really start to notice it when you do go to Normandy. I've started going a few years ago now, but the amount of veterans that were there, and it's shrinking sort of day by day, week by week, this pool of incredible men who don't see themselves as heroes or anything like that, and the reality of it is they were ordinary guys. That's the they're not supermen, but they did extraordinary things. And as that gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and these guys disappear. I mean, I remember over here when the last World War I veteran passed away, Harry Patch, and that was incredible. That was significant. And it will get we will soon be at that point again when the last, very last World War II veteran will pass away. And for someone like yourself and myself, I mean, I come from a family that was affected by the Second World War. My grandfather served in the Second World War on my mother's side. My other grandfather was nice and safe in South America, so he was okay. But he did, but they yeah he was deeply affected by the war, and it's something that it resonates strong within myself. So we have to keep these stories alive and keep these actions and these memories of these men and women going, so that yeah, like I said, we learn from we sh
Okay, I mean,
you know
again,
we don't, but we should
technology
learn from our
allows us
mistakes.
to document all these things a lot better than people were able to 85 years ago.
Yeah, exactly that.
Makes sense. All right, so Alex, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me. This has been really, really interesting and educational for me, and hopefully everyone
Brilliant.
else is enjoying listening to this. Thank you. I will be back
Yes.
tomorrow with another interview episode, but until then, Craig.
Great.